Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to Gaze on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I'm Ned.
And I'm Declan.
And in this time capsule episode, I haven't quite got that to second nature yet with time capsules. In this time capsule episode, we'll be discussing the classic queer road trip film, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Remember, there will be spoilers, so as always, do proceed with caution.
And why are we doing this particular film?
Oh, I love it.
No, I know, but why? Do you not remember the conversation we had?
No.
Well, when you're listening to this, we're on holiday in Mexico for my 30th.
Yeah.
And we said, why don't we try do a queer holiday type film?
Oh, yes, one about holiday.
And there isn't many of them.
No.
And I saw, and we're not doing a road trip, but I thought, oh, well, the closest I can get to it is The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I mean, we could have done Fire Island, but we did that.
I know, we did it. I know.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, yeah, I'd any excuse to rewatch it, so yeah.
Oh, I love Priscilla.
Do you want to do a synopsis?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Okay. Three drag queens are offered a great job in Alice Springs in North Australia. The trouble is, they're in Sydney and can't transport all of their wares by air. So they buy an old camper van and set off driving all the way across the Australian outback.
Yeah.
Pretty good. What do you want to say first? What did you think of
it? What I want to say first is I love this film. But what I found interesting, digging a bit deeper in the... we're going to do an episode on it, is I knew that I really liked this film, but I wasn't sure about whether other people did when it was released in 94.
Mm-hmm.
But turns out it was actually really, really positively, like, received. Mm-hmm. It was a worldwide hit. It helped kind of... it was a positive portrayal of LGBT individuals, helping, like, introduce these those kind of themes into the mainstream. Mm. And for probably a lot of people, introducing what drag is to people. It currently has 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, it's so good.
And actually, in certain critical list year ends for 94, it was actually in quite a few people's top 10 films of the year.
Mm.
It won an Academy Award for Best Costume Design. For the BAFTAs, it was up for Costume Design, which it won. It was also then nominated for Original Screenplay, Best Actor for Terrence Stamp, which is something we'll get into in a bit, mm-hmm. Best Production Design, Best Cinematography, and it also won Best Makeup and Hair, obviously.
Cool.
Was up for Golden Globes, up for Writers Guild. Like, it's... I really knew I liked it, but I really didn't get... I didn't quite... you know when, like, parts of queer culture are a bit... they're a big deal for us, but when you go out to the normies...
people are like, oh, I've heard of it.
I've heard of it, but I'm not seeing it. Yeah. But it's like...
no, yeah. Clearly it made... made waves.
It's very much a film that...
it must have had influence at the time, because the year after, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar came out. And that's kind of this, but in America.
Something says that.
Mm. Have you ever seen Tu Wong Fu?
In 1995, an American film called What You've Said was released, featuring three drag queens who travel across the US.
Yeah.
According to Al Clark, the creators of Priscilla heard about the film while shooting theirs and for a moment were troubled until they read the script when they decided that it was sufficiently different from Priscilla to not be a commercial and critical threat. Oh. So it was very like, it wasn't planned.
People had the idea at the same time.
Yeah.
And these got...
But both films have ended up with like a bit of a...
I mean, they are both... I love both of them, to be fair. Priscilla's... takes the biscuit for me, though.
And it's inherently Australian as well. Like, I think it's a big part of Australian queer culture. It was included in the 2000 Summer Olympics closing ceremony.
I didn't know that. That's fun.
Yeah. Priscilla was part of the big parade where they did, like, bits of Australian popular culture.
Yeah.
There's quite often... a lot around Mardi Gras in Sydney to do with it.
Yeah.
So it's had a massive impact. Obviously, there's a musical now on stage that is inspired, adapted
You've
from
seen
it.
It.
I have
you?
Seen it. It was an absolute great laugh. But, so we're talking about the film, the wider things. Shall we actually get into... So we're talking... We just talked more about its impact and its legacy and all that kind of stuff. And you can't... really finish that conversation to me without potentially having some of the discussions about some of what I would deem a bit racist and a bit sexist at times, parts of the film.
Yeah, before we get into those details and things, I just want to round off the kind of general thoughts with my first intro to Priscilla Queen of the Desert was... when will I have been? Maybe six. I was 16, probably. Mum got me it for Christmas not too long after I came out. Not because, like, she wasn't like, oh, you're gay, you'll like this. But I think she was, like, just subtly letting me know that everything is okay. Mm. So, yes, I loved it. And I've watched it so many times. So many times. Loved it.
There's a lot of emotional heart to this film as well.
Yeah. It's really...
And it really tries to break a lot touching. Of barriers. Like, even when it comes to, like, having Aboriginals in the film, meeting the drag queens, like, that kind of...
Yeah.
Two parts of a two different communities that have both had troubles at times through history.
Both marginalised.
Both marginalised. And there's that. There's, like... I just... Yeah. And I find it... I find the three characters...
Mm.
So we've got Bernadette, played by Terence Stamp.
Yeah.
We've got Adam Whiteley, played by Guy Pearce. And we've got Anthony Tick Belrose, played by Hugo Weaving.
And those two's drag names are, I think, Hugo Weaving's Mitzi and Guy Pearce's Felicia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to just get straight into it about Bernadette and Terence Stamp?
So, trans representation... In theory.
Yeah.
This, I think it does predate kind of popular conversation about casting decisions for trans characters.
Yeah, I agree.
And also predates kind of a lot of kind of worldwide, I think, critique of the way that characters are written and developed for queer people and particularly trans people.
I guess what we're saying is
we do have to take that context with it.
I guess what we're saying is if it was made now, I would
be criticizing it harder than I'm about to.
A transgender woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, in spite of it being a cishet man playing a trans woman, it was generally quite a respectful performance.
That's what I was going to say. I think he really. Seemed to want to perform it in the I am a transgender woman and he tried to understand that lived experience was like. So whilst there is issues with it being a cishet white man, his race doesn't really matter in this respect, but with it being a man playing a transgender woman, I do think it's probably one of the better examples of that happening.
Yes, I think it was quite cleverly done in in terms of kind of the way that Bernadette's character has developed and things. Like, whenever there are trans jokes in here, it never feels like Bernadette is the punchline. And she's always really able to, like, turn it back on the person that's kind of trying to take the piss.
And I think she has that incredible self-awareness of her own character and her own, what people are thinking about her, but she kind of understands it and uses those.
Yeah.
Like, there's a line where, because she's bereaved, isn't she? And she said, oh, some people have got things for transsexuals or something. But she doesn't say it in, like, a, oh, I'm so hard done by. It's like a real just, it's just a fact that some people like transsexuals and she's quite comfortable with, or transgender women. Like, she's quite comfortable with that fact. Like, I can't describe it properly, but I just think it's...
Yeah. And we use the word transsexual because she does, not because it's part of common parlance these days, I don't think.
Yes.
Yeah. Another example, I think, where really Bernadette was the butt of the joke was when Guy Pearce's character, what's his boy name?
Guy Pearce's character, yeah. Adam Whiteley.
When Adam dead names Bernadette and calls her Ralph, and she flips her lid and really tells him what for. And I think that is an important way to react to such a joke.
And because... I think it's an important thing for people to see as well.
And like... I think as well, it was good that the person telling that joke was Bernadette's friend and a queer person, because it was like a lesson in the extra layer of misunderstanding that trans people get, even among the queer community and things. So it was a learning point from Bernadette to Adam that, like, when someone transitions, you don't use their dead name. It's not...
Oh, yeah, that's, like, the it's biggest like, of birds.
Don't you fucking can, do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And she takes no shit. Like, she's really good at, like, holding her own throughout everything else, but that is, like, the line that I think is particularly hurtful to cross because they're supposed to be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess your best friends know how to get you as well. Like,
yeah. They know how to push your buttons.
Yeah.
And that was a button too far.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting is that they've all got their own story as well. Like, whilst Terence Stamp is like Bernadette's probably our main character, I like some of the queer perspectives that we understand, especially for this kind of time period. So Mitzi, Hugo Weaving, we find out has still got a wife, as they never divorce, so they've got that kind of...
His wife, I think he and his wife married originally, probably for, like, tax reasons or something, because she's gay, and they have a baby together.
But I quite liked that story as well. Like,
me too.
I like when stories are queer characters who have to fit societal moulds, and they make it just work for themselves. So a gay man and a lesbian's got married.
Well, it's amazing what marginalization will do for your creativity. Well,
exactly. That's what I mean. So I quite like that. And then I also quite like the naivety of a young, gorgeous Felicia, played by Guy Pearce, who is so fit in this film.
Just like carefree.
Yeah.
There are a couple of points at which that is challenged, I think. Which is interesting. I think there's a lot going on that Felicia doesn't necessarily deal with in life, because, like, at one point she's talking about childhood and little boy Adam was called into the bathroom and his uncle was sat there in the tub.
And they don't really go into any more, but abuse is kind of...
Well, he says he pulled the plug out and his balls were stuck in the plug hole for hours until his parents came home.
Yeah, I think...
But you don't really know what happened.
He's got that wall,
and
hasn't he
definitely doesn't say, yeah, this guy's like an abusive bastard.
Felicia's
blah, blah, blah.
Got that young person wall where
built
I think
the wall up.
They've not really been... they're not old enough to let the guard down a bit. And just like, oh, I'm gay, I'm free, look how amazing my life is. Where I think, maybe not now, but definitely in this time period, like, they all had their demons in some way or another.
And they're able to kind of, in some cases, move past them. But I think this was an example where Adam / Felicia definitely wasn't processing the kind of, I guess, childhood trauma, which maybe plays into that adult naivety and carefreeness.
Mm.
Because at one point she goes out dressed in drag that was very much more dressed as a woman than dressed as a drag queen. Mm. And there's loads of like burly men drinking beer around a fire, eating beef. And she flirts a bit, and then when they realise that she's actually a man, all of their prejudice comes out, and she's about to get very, very hurt before Bernadette.
Who's the? Oh, right, yeah. This is when they're in that mine in town, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Adam gets. But what I like is they use that device of a homophobic attack to kind of. They reach their understanding after they've had a bit of a fallout, and they all kind of come to terms about Tick's marriage as well.
There's a
and
name
they all kind
for,
of get on.
There's a name for that kind of attack when the attacker attacks out of like rage and blind panic because suddenly they realise that the person they've been flirting with or whatever is not the gender that they thought they were. There's a name for it. It's like a specific type of hate.
Oh, crime. It's like summit panic.
Yeah. Moral panic?
Something.
No,
yeah, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So a special type of crime that only sort of, I think, queer people probably.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's going to annoy me.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a word for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of where things get a bit scary, and I think Felicia's shit gets real for a hot second there. But yes, the day is saved, and then their relationship as a trio starts to kind of become a bit richer in the recovery from that, which is nice, as you were about to say.
Yeah. So what... Let's talk about a bit of the racist controversy around this film.
Go on.
It's portrayal of a Filipina character.
Yes.
Cynthia. So it's played for laughs, isn't it, basically?
Yes.
She has been a performer. And when she meets the drag queens, she gets jealous of those performing. And then we find out that she's banned from the bar that they're going to perform in. And then
it's a tiny town with a bar,
But she's like, I'm not having this. She goes to the cupboard and gets something out the cupboard, which we later reveal is a box of ping pong balls.
Yeah.
I don't really... One, I don't have a lot to comment on. Because it's not my lived experience.
Well, and also, like, knowing what we know now and being at the point in kind of general discussion about representation of different people around the world in cinema, after saying this is kind of racist and really problematic, there isn't, like, a whole lot more we can say.
I wouldn't do it now.
Definitely wouldn't do it now. And if it came
what is
out
interesting,
now,
though, is the musical
criticize.
Still has it in it.
Does it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Although I can't remember if it's... Can't remember if it's played, if it's about race or it's just about someone who likes to fire ping pong balls out the fanny, which
that's
does make
thing.
It slightly different. But this is using, it's like the worst stereotype of
it's
like,
those kind of like
an Asian
male
lady.
Male order bride type.
Yeah. Prostitute, gold digger.
Yeah, really didn't.
She'll fire ping pong balls out of a fanny.
It's not not a good look these days. That feature of this film really hasn't aged well, and I think that is very fair to say.
Producer Clark defended the film against these accusations, arguing that while Cynthia was the stereotype, it was not the purpose of filmmakers to avoid the portrayal of vulnerable characters from specific minority backgrounds. He stated that she was a misfit like the three protagonists are, and just about everybody else in the film is, and her presence is no more a statement about Filipino women than having three drag queens is a statement about Australian men.
I can get it, but it still is an uncomfortable
thing. I think producer is saying is, yeah. And I'm going to try and put it in terms that I would understand in my own head, that it's not the filmmaker's job to avoid showing a stereotype that exists for a reason. There's so many more nuances into that, because you could say, I don't know, white people have fetishized Filipino women into that, so somebody has created that stereotype. I think what they're trying to say is it's not up to them to shy away from that, what that stereotype, because I think that stereotype exists.
I think when we talk about kind of problematic tropes in cinema, though, isolating it like that is very easy to sort of justify it like that. But on the landscape of what gets portrayed in cinema, if there are no other characters that are, developed properly, fully formed humans, realized, self-realized people, then this is just another crude stereotype.
Yeah, and it doesn't subvert it, does it? It doesn't use the stereotype. It's not particularly critical. Flip it on its head. No.
Exactly.
It's just played for laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the very reason that it's problematic, is that it's just played for laughs.
Yeah.
So
because you're not sat there going, oh, I feel so sorry for that woman.
Exactly.
Look what she has to do to earn a living.
The producer can say what they like, and that's fine.
But hey, this is what this podcast is for.
And we are 20 years on, having had 20 years more of conversation about this sort of thing. So, 30 years. Ugh.
I was going to say, I was like, it looks way older than 20, but yeah.
1994, but my that mental math.
Conversation certainly has moved on.
But that
then.
Conversation's got 30 years more wisdom and experience.
It's as old
in it,
as me
so.
Now.
It is.
Should we talk about some of the...
I know, actually.
But I just saying 30 made me realise.
Yeah.
Some of the songs, very,
Yes, definitely.
Camp classics, pop
Love
songs,
them.
Queer songs. I like how Terrence Stamp's character... Why has that totally gone out of my head? Bernadette hates ABBA. I thought that was quite funny, especially with the modern lens where everywhere you go, especially around gay culture, post Mamma Mia is ABBA is just everywhere.
Yeah.
But we've got like Finally by CC Peniston, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. And
I've never been to Me by Charlene, the one that it opens with. I love it.
It's a bit. It's weird how the film. It's not a musical, but it has songs.
Yeah.
And sometimes the songs are within the scene.
Yeah.
But then others, it's like it just cuts to a bit of a song break, especially the ones where Adam's on top of the bus performing.
Yeah.
Those just seem like they're a little break from the story, whereas some of the songs are like, no, we're going to perform this in a bar and this is what the number will be.
I love that as a storytelling device there, really.
Yeah.
It's a fun way. And it also, I think, probably adds to its ability to be adapted for stage.
Yeah.
Which maybe wasn't necessarily what they were thinking when they first put it together, but it's... Oh.
I think I
love
like,
those breaks where you're sat on the shoe, on the bus, in the desert. It's just so, so unbelievably camp.
I think my favourite song in it, though, is shake your groove thing, yeah. I like how they perform that one.
I do as well.
But I can't, like the musical that we get now is a jukebox musical and has a lot of what this film has in it.
Ah.
But yeah, just great camp classics, like every song that comes on, you're like, oh, yeah. This,
yeah.
I'm going to have a bit of a bop to this.
Yeah.
The
bit that sticks in my head kind of rent-free, there's one line in it. well, not that I don't think about the rest of the film as well, but I really like that kind of quite early on, Adam plants the seed that he's always had. The reason that he's on this road trip is so that he can finally live out his lifelong fantasy of getting in full drag and walking up King's Canyon.
Or Uluru or something it's called, like Ayers Rock, that kind of area.
Well, I don't know if King's Canyon is part of Uluru, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
And then Bernadette goes, a cock in a frock on a rock. And it just makes me laugh so much. I just
you know
it.
What I just really
and
like?
And then they all do it at the end. Yeah. It's close to the end and it's just so fun.
What I really like about the film, and I like this in a lot of kind of LGBTQ plus films, is just like queer camaraderie.
Yeah.
Like when they're all drunk in that hotel room together after they get back from the bar.
Yeah.
That's just the experience of being with your gay friends together.
Yeah.
Like, I love my straight friends, but there's never, it's, I can't describe it. For me, it's never quite the same as when you've got a gaggle of gays. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I'd agree.
And
sorry
I just
to
love
the straight
it.
Friends of ours that are listening.
No, but well, they bring other things, but you'll just never get, like, when you're being daft and drunk and talking gay shit.
Yeah.
Then, yeah. Anything else?
Yes, actually, I like that what this does, as they go on their adventure through the desert and stop off at various small towns in different parts of Australia, it's like, they'll be confronted by the rather inconvenient truth that homophobia
exists. Yeah.
Queerphobia exists in society. And most often, the three of them not only kind of face that and take it in their stride, but become kind of quite a spectacle for local people wherever they are. Mm. They make friends along the way. And it's kind of a nice lesson in sort of being able to accept oneself, being able to expect and demand acceptance from society, and also remind us that just because queerphobia exists in the world doesn't mean we don't have a right to have a place in it.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And it also reminds me as well, like, just talking to people and seeing these people. People with different perspectives and different lives.
Yeah.
Just sitting and chatting to them can just dispel so many. And I'm talking about like even my own misconceptions about different people in society. I don't mean like, oh, just come and sit and talk to gay people. I'm also talking about when I sit and maybe talk to, you know, I always remember that documentary about transgender people. It was like, do you know anyone trans? It's like, no, but you're always a lot better off for when you know somebody.
Mm.
Because you can just understand it. And I just think some of those more quieter scenes where, yes, homophobia does exist, but they're sat and just chatting.
Just about stuff.
Then barriers drop. I think most people just realise that it doesn't matter what culture you're from or who you are or what you are, we're all pretty much the same.
Yeah. We're the same in the fact that we're all different, but I mean...
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
That makes us all the same. Like,
Our similarities make us, like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
But
can't remember the quote you're
People know what I'm going after.
Yeah. I think on that point of kind of understanding prejudice as well, this is a really fun way of challenging our preconceptions of the different characters we come across. What's his name? Is he called Bill? The guy that like has to fix the lorry.
Who then strikes up a bit of a relationship with Bernadette. Yeah, because you
kind of think he's like a burly, small town Australian man. Yeah. Like, as the film goes on, you kind of meet him and you'd expect him to be kind of civil at best, small minded at worst, but really is super open minded, very kind of worldly in his attitudes. And that's really fun. At that other town, they walk into the bar and everyone stops and stares. And it's the only woman in the room comes up to them and says, "We don't serve your kind here. Get the fuck out," basically. And then Bernadette reads her for filth and all of the men absolutely howl. She is laughing.
Oh, yeah,
And then suddenly they're all getting on like absolute house on fire and they have a blast.
Because I always think
so it's just that kind of breaking the ice type
yeah,
exercise,
like a lot of these, a lot of the views that people have, it's like you just have them. And
they're
you don't really, and when
not
yeah,
views,
when you put in a when you put in a position where you're in that, you're meeting someone who, you know, she's like, "Oh, get out the bar, we don't serve you." Then they all start laughing. It's like, well, yeah, why have I even said that? I don't really understand. Why don't we serve people like them? Like,
exactly,
it's just silly.
Yes,
I love. Some of the costumes in this film.
I was gonna say, but we could not talk about a film about drag queens without commenting on the looks.
Yeah, and I really like, my favourite are the like almost pop arty type looks a lot that Adam wears.
The ones that are very like
they're almost like a
PVC, they're made of plastic.
And like I like how they've got really flared trousers.
Yeah.
Cause I can imagine there's one thing seeing a drag queen. But there's another thing, seeing a drag queen dressed like that in like clothes that are so over the top.
Yeah.
That, you know, like when they're in these small towns, you
wouldn't What's your favourite look from
Priscilla? I like that one, that over the top one where, what's Adam's drag name?
Felicia.
He's got like a blue plasticky
blue
wig
and pink
on.
Plastic.
But I fucking adore Mitzi's flip-flop dress.
Mitzi's flip-flop
it's
dress.
It's so iconic.
It's
like,
so
I
funny.
Keep thinking, I was watching this thing and I know obviously I've got a 30th birthday party coming up, which, you know, I won't say any more, and it's got a bit of a theme. But I thought I'd love to maybe do a theme at another party in the future where you have to be like not just a character from a film, but a character from a LGBT film.
Right.
And I thought, that
does
flip-flop
leave
track,
a lot of room for interpretation.
It
actually
does, which is probably a good thing.
That's a good theme to have.
If someone didn't come as a peach, I'd be very annoyed.
A peach?
Call me by your name.
Oh, yes, of course. I was thinking James and the Giant Peach. I was like, that's not gay.
It's quite, I don't know. It's a bit gay. That spider's camp. Yeah, just the looks. And I like. When Bernadette, and I know Bernadette, this is where I always struggle with, because I know drag is an art form, and Bernadette sometimes is in drag, I would say, and then other times she's just dressed
as a Bernadette, woman. Yeah.
And I quite like the, because sometimes she's dressed as a woman when the other two characters are in drag, I would say. And she just looks quite demure, as if she's trying to blend in.
Well, I think you're on about the scene where Mitzi's wearing the flip-flop dress.
Yeah,
when
they
get to that hotel. So
she's, like,
because,
all in silver with, like, a headscarf on.
That is
like,
because Mitzi and Felicia were playing, like, a card game or something. And the wager for if Mitzi lost was that they had to go to wherever the next stop in full drag.
That was it.
And that's why Bernadette isn't in drag, but the other two are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great film. Oh, that I hope never, ever, ever gets remade because it doesn't need to be.
No, it doesn't.
We've got a musical to keep its legacy alive. So if you want to go have a bit of fun, go see it when it's touring again because I'm sure it always tours every few years. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
No?
Star ratings?
I went with 4. Don't really know why. Because I find films that are a bit older...
Difficult to rate.
Difficult to rate. But I think you'd probably get me, each time I watch it, on a 4 or 4.5, depending on what mood I'm in. I don't think I'd ever quite go to 5, but...
I think before I knew what I know now, I might have once upon a time called it a 5, because it did. It had quite an important role in my kind of self-actualization as a teenager. Mm-hmm. But I don't think a film with kind of... the issues we've discussed, kind of, it's not necessarily aging the best, can ever be a 5 these days.
I agree.
So for me, it's 4.5.
Great.
And that's all. No, it's not all. We've not done gaydar.
Oh my God. Now let us unsheathe the gaydar. It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV we discuss based on their LGBTQ+ appeal. Let's see where the gaydar ranks. The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I didn't know that this was its full title till like when I was putting the episode together either.
Me neither.
I always just thought it was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, but it's not. It's
and I even looked to see if it was like called something else somewhere in the UK. It was called something different, but no.
It's really funny actually. When you think of it called The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, suddenly the bus is the main character.
Yeah.
Interesting.
yeah, that is a bit weird, actually.
So, it's obviously very high up on the list. What we've got is 4th place, according to this.
So, what's below it first?
Below it, Passages, Red, White and Royal Blue, Barbie.
Okay, above it?
Bottoms, Sex Education Season 4, Heartstopper.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this film has massive LGBTQ+ appeal.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily give the full rainbow.
No.
From an identity perspective as things like Heartstopper and Sex Education. But for what it does do, I think it does very well. And obviously it belongs at the top of that kind of league of queer films. What a nice... collection of things we've got towards the top of gaydar ratings there.
Honestly,
then.
This as we build
so
this
what is
list,
it? Sex Education,
Heartstopper, like
Passages, Priscilla,
Bottoms, Barbie.
So they're like at the minute where we are with kind of queer content that we've done episodes on.
Yeah, I mean, Barbie is kind of the top of what I would call the kind of overlap section where there is a little bit of kind of there are queer actors in the cast or kind of hints of queer representation, but it's not about it.
Whereas that top bit
is like these are our queer
stories, the gay stories, aren't they?
So yes, quite liking how that's panning out.
Yeah, and I think one of our goals for this year is to do
get some more
and also kind of
LGBT
seek
cinema.
Out more LGBT, because I know there were probably some smaller independent films, like the fact that I think it's a massive coup that we did an episode on Passages, which is the most indie of indie films ever. But at least we're sticking to our kind of remit and what we do and what we like to talk about. But yeah, I just think it's a great queer film. Yes, it has its issues from a modern perspective, but it's a nice little time capsule.
Time capsule
for that time.
One from the archives, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate, and comment on your podcast platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We are at Gaze on Film Pod. And you can check out our Letterboxd accounts. The links to those are in the show notes. We would love to hear your thoughts, especially on this one.
Yeah.
So please do feel free to drop us a message. I have been Ned.
And I have been Declan.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.